Okay, I'd like to call the regular Fulbright County Board Supervisors meeting to order on this day of October the 7th, 2015. Let's stand, please, and say the allegiance in a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, first on the agenda, we have adoption of the agenda.
For my...
Yes, sir.
If I may, just because you've got the cooperative extension dinner.
Yes.
Depending on how long things go, if there's something that carries, you might want to consider, as you go through this, moving the two presentations up before the dinner instead of having to wait, if depending on how far you get in here, so that the two presenters don't have to wait because they're from outside the county.
All right.
But we'll see, timing-wise, you may be just fine.
Well, I think we're certainly.
Yeah, we go ahead.
I'm going to keep going.
Yeah, if we can, you all want to move them up now? Just go ahead and do it now. Let's move them up. Would we put them after the public comments?
Well, Dr. Bonds is here, but Mr. Phillips is not yet, but at least that would get one.
Yeah. All right, we'll move after the first public comments.
Okay.
All right.
You got a motion on that?
Okay, do we have a motion on the agenda?
So, ma'am.
All right.
Second.
All right, it has been...
Just to approve the agenda as modified by...
Okay, as modified, we'll make that change, okay?
So, ma'am.
All right. And we have a second motion by Mr. Weaver and a second by Mr. Olivebrook. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? If not, the agenda is set. County Administrator's Report.
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, members of the board, just one more, please. So just a few things to report. The cooperative extension dinner is tonight, and they're ready starting at 5, or
okay,
up to 5:30. So
okay,
depending on what your schedule is through this and how you go on the agenda items, you can either head right out there at 5 if it's convenient on the schedule, or wait till 5:30. Either will work. So I just wanted to give you that option. The comprehensive plan, which we approved the 16th, where we has back from printing now, and so you can see you've got your copies with it, a much pared-down version of what before, but a really nice document and easy to handle and easy to work with now. It's available online on the county website and, of course, at the library, the planning department, and county administration, and the public can purchase copies of the comprehensive plan from the planning department if they would like, for $50. But
nicely paid.
Yeah, this is going to be a really nice one to use because it'll be around for the next 5 years, and you know, you can lay it out flat, you can flip it over, and it wasn't terribly expensive to print, which is good. So the Prince William print office that has a cooperative contract that we use a lot for our printing things have very reasonable prices on a lot of our printing projects. So the work last week done by multiple departments on planning for the severe weather fortunately dodged a lot of the severe weather that could have been a big problem. But I'd like to appreciate all the folks that met on those different days and got prepared for the possibility and for Cheryl Elliott's coordination of all that effort to get ready just in case. I'd also like to point out the County Finance Board and Linda Renner, our treasurer, moved back in July 1st $5 million of county funds into the new Virginia investment pool. And you can see the results of that over the last 3 months. The net gain is $16,415 in earnings on those funds. So
that's great.
A big increase, even on a month where you know where the market changed and and the dollars went down,
still
more than made up for it.
That.
So it's really good. Good place to put some money. The educational panel has been installed at the Butterfly Garden at Pleasant Grove Park. That was from the Department of Game and Inland Fisheries. They produced this sign, and so it's there by the Butterfly Park. But great educational and training tool for kids when they bring them over there, and we worked out really well. So,
I have to see
And just a reminder, the Red Rocker Candy grand opening at their new location is on October 14th at 11 a.m. I think most of you have seen that information, but Congressman Hurt and First Lady Dorothy McCall from the Secretary of Agriculture and Forestry will be there that day, and I think a number of you are planning on being there as well. And just a reminder, you would approve putting these matters in the October personal property bills. I've given you a copy of the brochure. Now, this is you've seen the emergency services one before that's shown on the screen here, but this is the new James River Water Project one. So this and the emergency services one will be going in every one of those mailers to about 15,000 mailings for both of them. And some good facts and answers and questions in there about the project. And both of them are also available online on our website. So, and the cost ended up being, for stuffing, was only about $400 total.
That's
for 30,000 pieces.
Yeah, just to keep the community.
The printing, the printing was about, I think it was only $1,300 for 15,000 of these. And then 15,000 of the others, too. So a really good
Are you going to put them anywhere else other than in the mailing?
I don't have any extras of these now, so I have to order another batch. We've got plenty of the emergency services, but we have them at all public meetings. We'll take them to the library, have them in other places around the county and other county buildings, so they can always be available. And if you want some to take to, to churches or things like that, we certainly can provide some for you, too. But hopefully there'll be a good information brochure. Just a reminder about the business community business forum that we're planning and the business climate survey. For any of the board members, if you want to take a few of these with you, when you visit a business, this just explains what's going on, what kind of survey you're doing, and there's the how to access the survey for businesses. So you can drop this off to any business. Mr. Popovich is getting around to businesses and dropping them off. And we've got email blasts that go out to businesses around the county, too. And we've got a number of responses so far, but we'd like to get as many as we can from folks that do business in Savannah County. Developers, real estate agents, storefront businesses, internet-based businesses, etc. And then this drawing is a concept drawing. One of the ones that Mr. Moss had a company that created at no cost. And this is a concept of the potential, one potential look for the farm museum. Mr. George Abetti at Geobonds created that. But the Historical Society has raised almost $113,000 so far from the various sources. Their goal is $120,000. Now, that included a $30,000 match from the Perry Foundation, and it was a $30,000 grant that requires a $30,000 match. They had raised $23,000 for that full match so far, and the rest of it was going to come from the old Farm Day earnings. Problem is, old Farm Day got put off to May, and they need to do the match by the end of the calendar year. So the question would be, the county has set aside in the coming CIP $10,000 to support this project. Would you want to go to $15,000 so that they could still meet the match by the end of the year? And that's, I raise the question because the questions come up, and it's just because Old Farm Day was just canceled.
So. I don't know where I read, but they indicated that they thought they weren't going to have any problems on raising that money.
Yeah, they were, Mr. Weaver. They were very confident.
I understand Old Farm Day. Yeah.
That's the delta here. The $7,000 was the dollars from
I think maybe it was in the newspaper or something.
Yeah, it was in the
Yes. That they're still going to be able to raise it.
That was in last week's paper.
Yeah, before Old Farm Day was canceled.
No, after. I'd leave it like it is and see what happens towards the end.
Okay, I agree.
When does it go to be raised?
No, but when would they raise it?
Calendar year.
But when do they need to know?
When does
it? Well, we have to have a letter of support to be able to go to the Paragraph Foundation before the end of the year, because they have to have that full matching amount, is what the Historical Society has said.
We can come back and do that if we need to do it.
Yeah, I don't think we ought to lose $30,000. I don't know when the Perry Foundation needs to know about the match or not, but I don't know.
No, before the end of the year.
End of the year.
At the end of December.
Before the end of the year.
End of the calendar year.
Mm-hmm.
But does Old Farm have any other ways of raising revenue between now and then?
They said they did.
I don't know. This is the question that's asked.
It's in the newspaper, it's in the other way.
This is a question that's asked, and I pose it to you and
happen to be one
in your direction.
I always read the paper.
Well,
I get it.
Well, more information would be great, let's look at it.
Yeah, and when you're talking about the end of the year.
I don't think we want to wait too long, because it's.
No, the end of the year is a couple months away.
Right.
And the end of the year is not way down the road. So when do we?
I'm going to have a representative come and give you an update at your next meeting.
That'd be great, but I'm, you know, personally, I'm not willing to give up $30,000 for $10,000.
I don't think that'll happen.
I hope not.
I don't think it will.
Okay, well, that's good, because that gives me confidence. You're saying you don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think it is. They're not going to let it happen. They have extra money too, I mean.
We're not going to let it happen either. We.
Well, I mean, if you want to fund it yourself, there you can, right on the spot, you can take care of it right now.
Yeah. We're not going to let this happen.
But it's sunny outside, guys. It's sunny.
If we keep talking about this, we're going to be out of here by 9 p.m.
How about I just say, never mind, and I'll come back with a formal request, and you'll have more information.
Why do you always bring up this controversial stuff during the county?
Because I'm not allowed to not bring it up.
It's not controversial.
Don't you leave that for the night.
Somebody always has their hand down.
She made it controversial.
No, I don't think we can change the rules. We can tell people no.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's my role, so.
No, it's not. Okay.
Anyway.
Thank you.
I give you full authority to say no.
The next meeting is on, next regular meeting is actually October 21st. I'm not sure why I got the November on there. The next regular meeting is October 21st at 7 p.m. And then the November meetings are November 4th and November 18th. And remember, for the 18th meeting, you've got the Interagency Council dinner before the meeting that night at 5:30. That'll be in the Morris Room.
No wonder I was mixed up.
All right.
Any questions I go to?
Any questions?
We good over next 2 months.
I know. We have any questions? If not, then let's go on to the Board of Supervisors updates. Anyone have an update?
Excuse me, I was going to just comment on the county picnic that we have each year, and I thought it went along very well. I noticed that one person had 25 years with the county, and I think that Steve Nichols and employees did a very good job on bringing forth that picnic.
Thank you. Ms. Parrish, and Ms. Harris did all the work on it, but it was fun, and we appreciate Mrs. Booker and Mrs. Nichols helping serve. So
I called some of the employees this morning to eat up, and I had to tell them I drove through there before Old Farm Day. Of course, it got canceled, but I thought that they had the grounds look very nice. They've done a lot of work behind the house, around the house, and things. Mm-hmm.
I've heard that from other sources too, Mr. Chairman, so I appreciate it. I'll pass that on.
I called them this morning and told them.
Thank you.
That's good. Anyone else have anything to report?
TJPDC is excited about the Go Virginia program that's being talked about at the legislative end. That's really kind of a combination of regionalism, pushing regionalism requests, if you would, for economic development. It's kind of hush-hush right now in terms of what the details are, but the idea is that they're going to fund it to something, I believe, around $1 billion or something along those lines. So that might be an opportunity for counties to cooperate together to work on infrastructure projects. So they're very excited about that.
And I know that we'll have a guest speaker from the state coming to the Central Virginia Partnership for Economic Development at next month's meeting. I'll have information to be able to bring back to the board on the Go Virginia project.
Super. Yeah, that would be good. And beyond that, I think there's discussion around the rural transportation needs, the 2BH programs, and I can report that the two requests that we made for the roundabouts were in the program as stated and supported by the TJPDC. So those were the main things. I attended the Louisa Arts Gala, Silver Tie Arts Gala the other day. Had a good time there.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. They did a great job.
What kind of work?
It was for the Performing Arts Center. It's There was a terrific band there, and Mrs. Korn was kind enough to invite me, so I took her up on her invitation and went there. So
there you go.
So you're cultured.
Can be.
There's hope for anyone.
Okay, so
And then yesterday, I attended the CHIP annual event, their gala event as well, too, and that was very well attended. And again, CHIP has an office here in Savannah, and they highlighted three families that have really been impacted, including a young woman who suffered a brain injury, and CHIP was instrumental in helping her to raise her young daughter, and that was very moving. And then a young immigrant family whose wife died from cancer, brain cancer, and again, supporting the husband, raised the two kids there. So some good work being done by CHIP out there.
Yes.
I assume they were legal.
I didn't ask the question. He's very hardworking, and he's doing his best to support them. So.
Okay, I attended the CMPT meeting. Also attended the Java board meeting in Louisa at their PDCC office there, where they have classes. And then I received this note that says, "Dear Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors, thank you for hosting the Fluvanna County Fair at Pleasant Grove Park. It was great, and we can't wait until next year." And that's Maggie McWilliams. "Dear Mrs. Booker and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors, on behalf of all the 4-H kids and families, I would like to express our sincere appreciation of your support of the Fluvanna County Fair, and by extension, the Fluvanna 4-H Livestock Show held jointly at this venue. The fair is an exciting opportunity for our Fluvanna youth to share their knowledge, hard work, and love of agriculture with their community. And the community people, young and old, seem to love the expressions of being there at the fair and at our show, visiting the animals, talking with our 4-H youth, and perhaps walking around with a greater appreciation for the importance of agriculture in our county. 4-H youth in Fluvanna are the future of this rural community. Thank you for your support. Sincerely, Sarah Hernandez, 4-H volunteer. To make the best better." I thought that was very nice to take the time and have a handwritten report rather than an email.
4-H did a great job.
They did a great job. So that is very nice. I appreciate that. Anything else? Yes, sir.
Just one thing, if I can. I've got two staff members from the Finance Department that I haven't introduced you to yet.
Yes.
And I'd like to introduce both of them now. First, Lindsay Britton, who's our financial services technician and works largely on our payroll issues. So that she's very important to all of us.
Yes.
Wow.
And the City Judge, our county purchasing agent, is on board and has been on board about 3 weeks now, too, or maybe a month now.
4 weeks.
Okay, welcome. Glad you're all on board here. You're joining a wonderful team. Now we will have our public comments. I would open up for the first public comments. If you have something you'd like to talk to the board about, please come to the podium. Give your name and address, and you have 5 minutes. Anyone? And I will close the first public comments, and we will go to presentations. I think we have one person here, Mr. Nichols, for presentation.
Oh, we'll take Dr. Bond.
Okay, doctor. Okay. All right, we can go
on over to Mr. Phillips is here, then.
Mr. Phillips, Southeast Rural Assistance Project, Rural Housing. Welcome, Mr. Phillips.
We'll just move you up on the agenda so you don't have to sit around here.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yes.
Thank you for having me. And I'm with Southeast RCAP, which is Rural Community Assistance Project, Incorporated, and we're out of Roanoke. There's 18 of us there. I'm one of two rural housing rehab specialists. And just want to come here tonight just to briefly tell you a little bit about our services, to just put a face with a name a little bit and maybe leave a little bit of literature for you. But Southeast RCAP has footprints really all over the Commonwealth. We do a lot of work. I do personally a lot of work in Buckingham County. And so we just want to reach out to you guys and let you know what we're doing, and maybe we can be assistance to some of your folks here in this county. First, our mission, let me just read this to you, is to promote the development of affordable water and wastewater facilities, activities, and resources to improve the quality of life for low-income rural residents of Virginia. And we have a host of services. Please go to our website. Just to give you a quick bullet list of six or eight of these that are, I feel like, pretty impactful, is we do on-site assistance to evaluate cost-effective water and wastewater solutions and train groups about community involvement of water systems. Water is key. Water is life. That's sort of our logo. We have a banquet every year in April, sometimes May, that celebrates obviously all the benefits of water. We all need water. But it's on a national level. RCAP is a nationwide action group that promotes anything to do with water and wastewater systems. Southeast RCAP, home based here out of Roanoke, is really worked with seven states from Delaware to Florida. Virginia is key because obviously it's our home. And we started here and then it grew out from that to seven states. But we also have a loan fund which offers low interest loans to qualified homeowners in rural communities for water, housing, and community development. And we have Safe Water Assistance Project that ensures the compliance of small rural water and wastewater facilities. And housing, which is my primary focus, is indoor plumbing and rehab program for those without any water at all, or they have failed septic systems. Housing counseling, we have a couple of housing counselors on staff. Pre- and post-purchase counseling for rental and credit counseling, first-time home building and education, and home maintenance. We also have aging in place program. I'm a certified aging in place specialist where we adapt homes for comfort and safety for anyone that's got health setbacks. Project management to improve home accessibility and for disabled homeowners, and we have two specialists on staff. Miscellaneous grants, we have a host of different grants. We can certainly try to find funding for owner-occupied housing rehab. And we also have a VFC break. It's a program we run through the colleges. It's a great program to get the volunteers from the community, couple them with college folks, kids, during their spring break, and so they could do volunteer programs. Some of the projects include minor repairs, weatherization, painting, cleanup. And, you know, for these kids, it's sometimes a life-changing experience when they, you know, interact with community volunteers and they sort of see a broader perspective of how everything fits together. But I just want to spotlight real quick, and I can leave this with you to circulate and just keep on file, of some recent projects. These happen to be just across the river in New Canton. This was a critical build, repair, accessibility improvements where we took a widow that had mobility issues and actually a lot of safety issues around the house. We provided a stable ramp, and we rebuilt a bathroom for accessibility improvements and grab bars and proper electrical wiring so that she would be safe. This was along with a roof and a porch and little things that really do add up in the long run so that she can stay living at home and not have to be moved out to an expensive nursing home or something. This was a little bit further down the road and still in New Canton, where we just simply redid a bathroom, put a wheelchair ramp on the house. Then I'll just leave you with a little bit about the indoor plumbing rehab program. You know, we've been doing this program for many, many years throughout the region, and you know, it was tailored through the DHCD, and these are some of the requirements, but I encourage you to take a look at these handouts. There's a little bit more on CERCAP Housing Services. I'll leave you my card. And yeah, are there any questions offhand?
Mrs. Armstrong is on your
ICAP.
Yeah. I know my husband was on there about 25 years.
Okay.
And you all did a lot of work for us when the Sanitary District put water in that area to get bathrooms into people's homes. Because the water was there, a lot of people were just happy to have the water in the yard that they could pump and didn't have to go to a well. But then ICAP began to help people get bathrooms in. A lot of the things that you mentioned, Louise and Fluvanna Housing Foundation, I don't know, you probably work with them, do some of the same types of things. But it was real interesting to me to hear those things that you all could do that maybe, that I know I there's some people in the community that could use your assistance. So I think I'll just talk to Mrs. Armstrong. I think Mrs. Armstrong is the only Fluvannian on there now. I may not be familiar with everybody because I know it's a
Yeah, it changes, it rotates.
Yeah.
But yes, I do know her.
But you all have been doing good work for a long time, long time.
Thank
and I appreciate you reminding us. I think it's the first time we've ever had ICAP to come and talk to us. And I think it's a, I appreciate you coming to let us know that you all out there, you all work with seven states and you all have been doing a good job. And, you know, just one more organization that we can call on for winterizing and those type of things that our citizens need.
Well, we're established and, you know, if we can't find a solution to the problem, we certainly have a lot of contacts and we'll figure out what can be done. And
great.
So I appreciate that.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For presenting that to us. Okay. Next we have Fluvanna Health Status Update. Dr. Bonds.
From our accredited health department.
We are accredited.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Great.
So I'm very pleased to be here today to give you a, kind of an update and a brief summary of the health status. See if I can.
It's just the right-hand button.
Of course, it's not that button. The right-hand button, not the one that's fifth down. There we go. So I'm going to start by updating you on the MAP program. As you may recall, the MAP is the Mobilizing for Action Through Planning and Partnerships. This is a community health assessment and community health improvement plan that the Thomas Jefferson Health District started back in 2012. And so this is our third annual update on this. We're actually about to start our next health improvement, health assessment in January, and I'll talk a little bit about how that's going to be changed at the end. So in the health improvement plan, the district decided on four priority issues, and this was done in conjunction with all of the interagencies in each of the counties. And the four priority areas that were selected were the increasing rate of obesity, the insufficient access to mental health and substance abuse services, large and insufficient prenatal care and racial disparities in pregnancy outcomes, and then tobacco use above the Healthy People 2020 goal. So the obesity, we set some objectives to achieve each, or for each priority, and one of the objectives for obesity was to reduce the percentage of adults living in our planning district who are physically inactive from 24% to 20%. It's kind of an awkward objective because it's a reverse of what we want to achieve. So in Fluvanna, you have about one-fifth of your population that don't participate in any physical activities in the past 30 days. This is data from 2014, which is both good and bad. That means that four-fifths of your population are out doing exercise activities on a regular basis, but it does mean that one-fifth are not reaping the health benefits of regular activity. Another objective that we had was access to exercise opportunities, and here's a couple of examples. The River Trail, I think this picture is actually just taken right back here, and then another exercise opportunity up in the corner. But half of your population lives within 3 miles of a recreational facility, and for a rural community such as Fluvanna, I think this is actually pretty good, that there are so many opportunities that people can go and participate in exercise and physical activity. A big priority is to stop the trend of individuals who are overweight or obese from increasing. This is a really tough one to tackle. Being overweight or obese puts you at greater risk for developing health issues such as diabetes, arthritis, and heart disease. And this is some data from the U.S. County Health Rankings. And the solid line is where the United States at. And you can see from 2004 until 2011, there's been a gradual increase across the United States with maybe a little bit of leveling out in the past few years. In Virginia, pretty much paralleling that same line with the United States, Fluvanna was a little bit higher until recently and seems to be trending in the downward area. So I think overall that's a plus for Fluvanna. It seems to be improving with fewer obese individuals in the county. Our second priority was mental health. One of the objectives we've had here was to decrease the number of self-reported poor mental health days. I will say, unfortunately, there's not huge and great data on mental health. There are a number of surveys that we can access that provide data on a countywide level. This is from the Behavioral Risk Factor Survey, and it simply asks, in the last 30 days, how many days have you had poor mental health? And you can see these are three-year averages here, and I've circled Fluvanna. But Fluvanna overall does reasonably well with individuals reporting on average about two poor mental health days. You know, certainly we'd like everyone to have great days every day, but two is not bad. So,
what were the mental health, like depression, or
the question is very broad. It doesn't specify were you depressed, were you anxious. It simply says, did you have, how was your mental health on those days?
Oh, mine's not good today.
Who gets these surveys? Who gets these surveys?
So this survey, so the federal government and a number of different agencies do a number of surveys on a regular basis. This data is from what's called the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Survey. And every year, the CDC, who manages this survey, does weighted population averages and has a standard set of questions that they've asked for decades about your health.
And who do they ask
them? They call.
So that creates some other issues because as the population has changed from landlines to cell lines, it also alters who you get. It's a really interesting survey. If you ever get called by the CDC, I would encourage everyone to participate.
So basically, you're getting, let's say, 500. You talk to 500 people, and then
what? Thousands.
Not in Fluvanna.
And let's say
you talk to 50 people in Fluvanna County, and then it's a game of averages.
It absolutely is.
So and these numbers are just.
Well,
it depends on what 50 people you talk to.
It depends on what 50 people you talk to, but I would say that, you know, consistently over the last, this is data from 2004 till 2012, they're always different people every year, and so over that time period, most people have reported two, on average, two poor mental health days. So I think that says, and I wouldn't be upset about that. Two is a pretty reasonable number.
No, I've been going back to obesity.
Obesity.
And your other ones.
Not all of this data comes from the behavioral risk factor survey, but
a great question is, how do you know who's obese and who not? It's a little bit scary when you come.
Well, so obesity is probably, so this number is actually probably an underreporting, because if you ask people, people consistently underestimate both their weight and overestimate their height, and so this is a BMI, and so.
And that's another phone call that.
This one is probably through a phone call as well, although you can get obesity from other sources of data. So we could go around and measure people, and the NHANES, the National Health something survey, actually does go out and do in-person sampling, where they bring people into their mobile van and they take their weight and their height and their blood pressure and a variety of measures.
On a volunteer basis.
It is on a volunteer basis, but it's not please come in and do it. It is, you have been selected, would you please participate? You know, this is a free country, you can always say no. But in terms of survey sampling, this is about as rigorous as it can get. So I think if anything, probably a slight underestimate. And I think having two poor mental health days is not bad and consistent. If we were seeing lots of inconsistency in the data, I would be more concerned that there was some.
I think one of the biggest shortfalls in this country is not tracking mental health and obviously.
I would agree. I would love to have better measures of mental health, but unfortunately, it's not been a priority for this country. I will tell you something that you can do as a community. So another objective was to decrease stigma and fears associated with mental health, and we don't have a good way to measure this one, unfortunately. So what we can tell you is that there is a very intensive training program called Mental Health First Aid, in which you spend between 8 and 12 hours learning about the symptoms of various mental health illnesses and how you as an individual can help people access mental health services when they're needed. I actually had all of my frontline staff in the health department go through this training, because we deal with people on such a close contact on a day-to-day basis, and I wanted my staff to be prepared to deal with them. Region 10 here in our community will train it. It's a very low-cost course. There's one for adults and one for teens. In our total community, we have about 300, and it's probably a little greater than this, closer to 370, 400 individuals. But that is an easy training that anyone can go through that helps destigmatize mental health. And so I would certainly encourage people to do that. Prenatal care was our third priority, and the goal here was to increase the percentage of pregnant women who get 10 or more prenatal visits from 66 to 75 in our district. And to do that, you really have to start prenatal care in your first trimester. And here you can see, now this is a little, unfortunately, a little deceiving, because it's not a full percentage access here, but about 80% of the women in Flubana start in their care in their first trimester. And that's about consistent with what we see in our district overall and what we see in the state of Virginia. So in general, most women are accessing prenatal care when they find out they're pregnant in their first trimester, and that's great. The second objective in this was to decrease the percentage of low birth weight black infants from 12 to 10%. So one of the things that we found in that health assessment was that there was a huge disparity between infants born to white mothers and infants born to black mothers. And here's what we see overall. The Healthy People 2020 goal, so low birth weight, the goal overall in the United States is about 8%, I believe. And you can see that babies born to women who are self-declared white in this county are consistently below that goal. These are, again, rolling three-year averages. And babies born to black women are close, but still we see a higher percentage with some fluctuation over the time. And I'll show you a map at the end of my talk that gives a little indication about why this might be happening. So I think this is an area that we're still working on. I would say that Fluvanna is not different than the rest of the district. It's an area that's still kind of a work in progress for us. Tobacco use. Tobacco use is always a challenging subject. It's we're making progress. So one of the objectives was to decrease the percent of individuals who use tobacco in our district. Now, unfortunately, we can't get county-level data on this, and so all I can give you is for the entire district. And overall in the district, we are lower than Virginia, but still higher than the Healthy People 2020 goal, which is about 12%. So we are making progress. Unfortunately, I wish I could give you county data, but without going out and doing some house-to-house sampling, I'm really pretty limited
by it. Cigarettes and smokeless tobacco?
This in 2013, which is the last good data we have, that would have been primarily cigarettes. I think they will be adding about e-cigarettes. The story on e-cigarettes is complicated. You know, obviously, it's better not to use any tobacco products. But I will tell you, there's some data that using e-cigarettes may help you quit tobacco. It's very mixed data, and I wouldn't bank a lot on that. But
I'm talking about the Grizzly that you put down.
That would be, yes. So chewing tobacco would have been included in this as well.
That's like a pretty experienced move.
I know. You can bet that one.
So another measure that we use is the percent of mothers who smoke during pregnancy in 2013, and you can see here that it's still 7%, but it's only 7%. So I think this is good and bad. It's a little better than Virginia as a whole, but we still have a number of women who are smoking during that pregnancy. We're working on this at the health district and trying to target some education at OBs about how to get women into treatment who come in who are pregnant and smoking. So a lot of this data, and something that I will pass out, came from the County Health Rankings. The County Health Rankings is a project by Robert Wood Johnson, and I think this is kind of fun for people to go. This is a website. I will give you a summary of your of health measures. But Robert Wood Johnson works with the University of Wisconsin to rank every county in every state. They rank them by state. And they rank them on a whole variety of measures. So this is kind of their algorithm. They provide two rankings, one for health outcomes and then one for health factors. And you can see here the items that go into that. There's a very clear definition on the website, and you can go and look at some of the trends on each of those. But essentially, the health outcomes looks at length of life and quality of life, and then the health factors looks at health behaviors, access to clinical care, social and economic factors, and then the physical environment. And the good news is that Fluvanna actually ranks very high in the state of Virginia. You all are ranked 18th for both health outcomes and health factors. So I think that's great, and you are to be congratulated on how healthy the county is. There are about 130-plus, because cities are ranked in addition separately. So Charlottesville, for example, is ranked separately from Albemarle County. So overall, I think Fluvanna is doing great. I will give you the factors here, and you can look at it. I encourage you to go to the website. It's very fun to play and just see how things are and where you've been over time and how things are changing. Interesting data to play with. One thing I will say is that although you're ranked really high, there are still pockets in this county, and I think that's true of every place, where it would be great that we could provide more health services and health opportunities to them. This is some work that we had an intern do a few years ago, where he developed a risk score for maternal and child health, and then broke down each of the counties by their census blocks. You can get this data from the U.S. Census, and this gives a more granular view of what's happening in your county. So those census blocks that are towards the blue and green end have a better risk score, and those that are towards the orange end have a worse risk score. And you can see there's a band across the county there where they really are not doing as well, at least in maternal and child health, as we see other areas. And so that's an opportunity for us at the health department to provide some interventions and services to that area, and an opportunity for our partners to work there as well. And let me just, sorry, there was no way for me to get rid of this animation. You can see here, he breaks it out into some of those risk factors. And there's a very high percentage in those areas there of births born to black women, 30% as a much compared to a much lower percent. There's a higher use of tobacco in those areas, particularly in that lower quadrant there, where 15% of the mothers are using tobacco during pregnancy. Only 65% of those mothers are accessing prenatal care during their first trimester. And you can see that 11% of the babies are actually born to teenagers. So a really high-risk group, and really an opportunity for us to do something for the citizens of Fluvanna that could very much improve their health. So as we start this next health assessment and health improvement plan, our goal at the health department is to now provide a health improvement plan that's tailored for your county, and to provide data, hopefully, we're hoping that we can get to this degree where possible, where we can get granular data down to the census block. We're going to be expanding our collection of data to include more qualitative data so that we can get the citizens' view on how they feel their health is in this county. And I think that'll provide us with some information that we can feed back to you so that you have a better idea of what's going on in terms of health in the county. So thank you. I will leave the summary of this. I'll also leave our 2015 MAP health update. It gives a lot of the same information I provided tonight, but in paper form, so you can go back. I'd be happy to answer any questions about the health department or the health of the county.
We need to change our motto. Great place to live, work, and play, and stay healthy, right?
Yeah.
You know, overall, I think Fluvanna does a great job at helping people. I think, again, there are some pockets where we have an opportunity to keep bringing that ranking up. I will say one of the things that probably brought your ranking down a little bit is the ratio of primary care, of providers to citizens. And you suffer because you have Albemarle and Charlottesville right next door, where there's this huge wealth of providers, and I think most people go there to get their care. Right. And I'm not sure that you're ever going to be able to really fix that easily.
How do we rank regionally? Like, we're number 18.
That's in the state. Oh, you mean amongst a planning district? So I'm
135.
He's talking regionally.
I mean, that's five we're ahead of them.
No, so Albemarle was actually ranked second in the state.
Oh, yeah?
Charlottesville was 44.
Yeah,
Louisa is somewhere in the 30s.
Right.
I don't remember where Nelson and Green are. But I think actually you're amongst the counties that in our health district are pretty good.
10.
So we could fund a little less.
Okay. That sounds good.
Thank
you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Now, we have some time for our... We do not have a public hearing today, so we will go to action matters. And we'll do S, the deer hunt for handicapped hunters at Pleasant Grove.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is the fourth iteration of this activity, and I'll go into whatever detail you want, but I don't think you need very much. This is designed, the primary objective of this is to control the deer population on Pleasant Grove, which is excessive. And you decided some time ago that it was a good idea to control that by having a specific dedicated hunt for handicapped people. We intend to do the same thing this year that we've done in the past. Last year we had a chronological change, because what we found was that there was very little activity in the morning, and then even less in the middle of the day. It was a lot in the afternoon. So what we did to make it less wearing on the participants and easier on the volunteers was instead of starting at 6:30 in the morning, we started at 2:00 in the afternoon, and we intend to do that again. Last year, we had a very disappointing result. Nobody got a shot. That was in stark contrast to the two preceding years where we got very good results. We're not sure why that is. There was a lot of information that there was too good a mass crop, and so the deer were in the woods, and we were really not in the woods. But I think that's what we intend to do. It's all volunteer project. If you have any questions about it, I'll be glad to answer anything I can. The sheriff is here too. If you need
to. What happens to the meat?
I'm sorry?
What happens to the meat?
The people that shoot it keep it, or they can donate it to one of the other bodies, or they can give it away. The animal belongs to the person that harms. So in the past, most of them have kept it for themselves. There was one guy a couple of years ago that had, you know, you can kill six on a regular license, and I think he wound up killing six, and he gave away the two that he killed at Pleasant Grove.
But it gets used regardless.
Oh, absolutely. They're picked up, and I know personally, before last, I field dressed six deer in one day, so that's what the volunteers do.
Did you all have this in October? I thought you had it the last time hunt season.
Right around New Year's.
No, it's always at the end of the year, and the reason we do that is because with population control, what you want to do is harvest the does.
Oh, okay.
And does are only legal in Fluvanna last week or so. And we need to avoid Christmas. Right. So yeah. This year actually comes an anomaly, because usually the season ends the 4th or the 6th or something like that. This year it ends on the 2nd. So we made a decision some time ago that it was not really fair to the volunteers to take the last Saturday of the season away from them.
Yeah.
So we've been doing it just consistently the next to last day of the season, which this year happens to be New Year's Day. Mm-hmm. That's the reason we chose that day.
Okay.
I've brought this up before. I know y'all had trouble last year seeing some. I can tell you right now, if we can check whether we need to get somebody behind the schools or if we could hunt those back practice fields, there's 8 to 10 out there every afternoon.
You had said that to me before, and that's fine. And that's an example of the kind of overpopulation.
But this way, we can't get tackled on our practice field. They're not coming up. Oh, man. Mm-hmm.
I know what you mean, and that's something that.
Mr.
Smith is listening to you, and I'm sure he'll bear that in mind, and the sheriff will, in terms of.
I'll make sure we're legal with doing that, but that would definitely miss by at least 1 to 2 people could be.
Right. Okay.
I move the Board of Supervisors authorize the sheriff to conduct a deer hunt at Pleasant Grove for the purpose of controlling deer numbers. Such hunt to be managed by a sportsman and nonprofit organization providing outdoor recreation opportunities for handicapped hunters.
Second. All right. So the motion by Mr. Allenbrook, second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Do we have enough time for the reclassification?
We got time to do them all.
Yeah, you won't get them all. You can either go out there at 5 or 5:30, but
okay.
You're not going to finish up.
All right,
are we going to be able to finish up closed session? Not by 5:30.
Let's go ahead.
There's a whole bunch of stuff on closed session.
Yeah.
About to fill up.
Okay, Ms. Parrish. This is reclassification of information technology position.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and members of the board. I'm here to present to you a proposal to reclassify the IT technology position. We're looking to reclassify and raise it to a higher band level. Over the years when we first brought the IT technologist, back in 2012, it was basically a help desk position. with all the new technology that we have that's going on in Fluvanna, we need more advanced skill level. And that is why we have, are proposing the information technology systems engineer position. I've provided both the old and the new proposed position descriptions.
Is this in last year, in this year's budget?
It won't affect the budget because if you look, the physical impact is...
$2,000.
Actually, it would be...
$2,000 less.
Less. Yes. It's about $2,000 less.
For the department.
For that department for this year.
I briefed this to you when Mr. McMahon departed, that we needed a different skill set to bring in. Mm-hmm. Mr. Notman was promoted to the department head, and we wanted an additional skill set in this one, and briefed it then, but that's why it's on your agenda now.
Mm-hmm. But to me, it raises a question. You're going from 61 to 71, which...
No, the other way.
Director.
No, we're going from 71 to 61.
You're going back the other way.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then you're going from 37 to 45.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that going to be more difficult to get a director then for less...
We have a director.
But
everybody doesn't stay here 100% of the time all the time either. So in the future, is that going to, you know, if they're getting less in the future, how's that going to affect?
No, it's in the same pay band. Mr. McMahon was here longer. He came in with a higher salary because of his education and skills and everything. Yeah. And that's why, but it's the IT director is in the same pay band. I haven't changed that position classification.
You just redid the job description for the specialists and made it a little more skilled.
More skills, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, only one job description was rewritten, the IT technologist, which was mm-hmm. established in 2012 when you added a second person to IT to actually run all the county functions, was called an IT technologist. We just need a different skill set, and because we have a vacancy, it's the time to make the change.
To take a look at it and make the change.
Okay. All right. Any more questions about this? If not...
I think this...
Okay, are we ready for the motion?
When we make the motion, then I move to reclassify the IT technologist position. Classified 1121, pay band 12 to an information technology system engineer position. Classified classification 1122, pay band 15.
All right, you've heard the motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion from Mr. Weaver and second from Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Next, we have fiscal year county pay plan. And that's from Ms. Parrish as well.
Every year, mm-hmm. I review the pay plan that we have, the bands, and take a look after we've had the approved budget. And I'm making a few recommendations on adjusting the bands. We're slowly getting back up there to that it's going to be competitive, our entry-level positions. So the primary recommendations are that the pay bands 1 through 14, which are mostly our non-exempt staff, minimum raises are adjusted as shown on the... can we bring the schematic up? That will show the two... there it is. You will see the minimum was brought up, which would mean I have to adjust the mid-range.
And these are not actual pay raises.
No, nobody is. Well, not everybody is within that band.
This is your pay chart based on Ms. Parrish's analysis, and the 1.5% cost of living increase you did this year. Mm-hmm. That's essentially applied to those lower ranges.
Okay.
Correct. And they're still sitting within those ranges.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Four classifications of positions move to higher bands. This helps better align them I'm also recommending to move the constitutional officers' positions. They've been sitting way too low. They're not within what even the state has, so I've got them in alignment with what the state and national market ranges.
But it's not changing anyone's pay.
No.
No, no salaries will be changed.
So let me do an example here. The constitutional officers, I think, were in 24?
Correct.
Yeah. So they were in pay band 24, and the minimum was 73,399.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They all their salaries fall within, their current salaries fall within the pay band 26, 79, 454, and 124. But instead of leaving them a lower pay band and have some of them above the pay band schedule, we
some
move
of them
pay band where they should
why,
be.
Why
there's no
be,
pay increases.
Why would they be above the pay band?
Because you approved pay raises.
It was approved.
1.5%.
Over the years.
Over the years.
No, over the years we had we've had positions.
30 years.
We do this every year.
Every year.
So, and every year, the constitutional one was always, there was always at least one that was above
But you can't
maximum.
Say over the years we've been given the raises, because every single year we raise the bands.
No, no.
You come to us.
I've adjusted bands, but I have not raised the maximum. I haven't raised the maximum of the band since I've been here. I've raised the minimum, but not the maximum.
To give an example, let's say it's a $20,000 salary, and this year you give that person that has a $20,000 salary a 1.5% pay increase based on a cost of living. So there's a vacancy in that department for the exact same position. When you bring the next person in, you wouldn't go back to the old 20,000. You'd go to the 20,000 plus 1.5% as the baseline.
And that's what we adjust every year.
No.
That's what, but we haven't. We haven't adjusted any of the tops, just the bottom.
And when we get to constitutional officers,
right.
Elected positions,
right.
They're elected.
Yep.
They're not hired. They're not hired professionals. They're elected. And they're elected at a pay scale, at a pay rate. I'm a firm believer that if you're elected, that you don't get elected because the job pays really good. You get elected to serve the county. And
sure, that's what you vote for.
That's what they are. You follow me? So raising pay bands on an elected position. I've got a little bit of a problem.
Sir, the state raised all of the constitutional officers' pay bands. I'm bringing our, with what we also, some of our constitutional officers we pay above what the state reimburses. Some we do not. I moved the constitutional officers so they would be in alignment with what the pay bands are from the state, that the state mandates that we have to.
There's a minimum.
A minimum we have to pay them.
Right,
and that's what I moved our constitutional officers.
Some of them are really close to what the state pays.
Correct.
Some are a little higher. And
so
some have some differential pay because of certifications.
And this is something you have to do. If you don't, you get so, it'll be so confusing. If you don't do what you're doing.
I'm not talking about the employees. I'm talking about the constitutional officer
stuff.
And there was also a compression issue because of our constitutional officers and the directors.
It's an elected position. It's not a hired professional.
So what does that have to do with what she's doing? Because
I'm not going to argue about it. Because
we're not arguing. I'm just going to understand what you mean. What do you mean? Tell me again.
I think those pay grades should be left alone. They're elected positions.
But if we brought somebody in...
You don't bring someone into an elected position.
When they're brought into the position, we have to pay them what the state tells us to pay them.
And right now, we're in those lines. We're not...
We're above.
That's what the minimum statute was. Yeah, we're above it.
One of our constitutional officers, the pay that is above the maximum of what the current range is. more aligned so that they are sitting within the range that the state mandates and what we are currently paying, so that we don't have any of the positions outside of the range, above the range.
Now, theoretically, I think you could probably legally do this. You could pull the constitutional officers completely out of the pay classifications. I'm not in there.
Yes.
But you can just pull them out of there completely because you have a mandate on what you have to pay them.
Sure.
And because you pay them more, it's because you recognize that there's cost of living or the market or whatever. But you've done that over the years. You could take them completely off the pay chart, and it wouldn't matter where they fall as far as a level. Just take them off there. I'm not in the pay band.
Yeah, and I don't have a problem with that. Sort of muddies
the
water.
That's a lot simpler because it
muddies the water.
When you always put paper on what you're doing, not employees that's me or...
Yeah, I was just trying to make it so that they're within the band of what we have established.
They're not employees.
And if you want to take them off, that's fine.
And I don't... It wouldn't affect the constitutional officers at all. I don't know if there's any here.
Yeah. So if you're taking off,
I'm going to
pay.
That's true. But I mean, we can check with the other constitutional officers. But I don't think it'll affect them at all because there's a state mandated pay, and whatever they're at now, you're not going to lower it down. The only question that comes is when the position changes.
Right.
I'm not trying to ask for a raise. Just making sure that our pay is within the ranges.
Right. And even if you took them off.
If you take them off the pay plan, then every year you would have to make the decision whether they included in any raises.
Right.
Well, and that was always
not each year anyway. They're looked at anyway.
Right. Yeah,
correct.
Right. Just like they've agreed to be considered in the pay plan, like all other staff, mm-hmm. because that's constitutional. Mm-hmm. Agreed to that. But one of the benefits of putting them in pay plan 26 is it essentially sets them aside. Of the director level or department level, because they're elected officials, they're different, and I think this is reasonable and appropriate. But taking them off would be just as fine; it wouldn't matter.
It wouldn't matter. So
at
why
least
take
now
them off?
We have a maximum.
Okay.
No, we stay within that.
No. I also made a correction in the on two of from the sheriff's department last year when the schematic was approved. It had flipped. Two of the positions, the sergeant and the investigator. So I corrected that this year. It did not affect anybody's pay. It did not affect anybody who was promoted into that position. There was no effect. I went back to make sure that there was no effect on either of those, but I did put it on and corrected it this year so that they are sitting in the correct band.
Yes. Did we decide what we're going to do there?
No, it's up to you. Up to you all.
There's some virtue to doing what the staff's recommended because, if you recall, the constitutional officers did specifically opt into the pay plan. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to do that. And I guess this is an instance where I view this as kind of, it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right.
Seems to be working reasonably well, and I'm not aware that any of the constitutional officers object to it.
No.
It seemed to me that having them in there does make it, it probably makes it clerically simpler.
There are two positions that I am recommending that you do change their bands, and one of them is the library clerk. The library clerk has been sitting in extremely low, and by bringing the library clerk's band, again, it does not affect anybody who is currently in the position, but if we would hire somebody, it brings them to what our goal is, that none of our full-time positions would be under $12. So that position would move to a band that any entry level would start at $12. And then the other position that I'm recommending is the deputy sheriff patrol or bailiff. That position, there was an agreement about 3 years ago to bring them in above what the band that they were sitting in, more than the 15, there was a set amount. My recommendation is let's put them in the band of where their entry level is so that we can move them along that band instead of having less room for advancement and increase in pace. I am also recommending to change the assistant county administrative position because it was sitting with all the other directors. Even though we do not have that position at this time, if it should ever come about, I do look at positions, even if, you know, we have a position description for market, and it makes more sense to move it from 23 to 24, just one grade above what the other directors would be.
Okay. Anything else? Any questions?
I move to adopt and approve for Vernon County FY16 pay plan, including the FY16 pay plan, salary schedule, and the FY16 schematic list of costs.
All right, we have a motion by Mr. Unnenbrook, second by Mr. Ryan. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Thank you for it.
I got one more.
Nice work. And
thank you.
Thank you. All right, the next one we have is on the proposed additional compensation for degrees, licensures, and certification policy.
When we did some of our research that Tiger Team took a look at, and we found that the top five motivators for retaining employees, as well as what new employees are looking for when they look at them, are acknowledgement and respect, their compensation, flexibility and time off, increased responsibilities and challenges, and then personal development. We've addressed some of these areas, but one of the big ones is when we hire employees, we do consider any degree that they have, any certifications, any licensures. However, once the employee comes to work for us, if they gain a degree or a licensure or a certification, they are not recognized in any kind of compensation. And the only way for them to receive any higher pay would be for them to go and find a new position, either within or outside of the county, in order to have that be considered. So we're looking at it as a part of our retention tool, a recognition tool, a compensation tool to help keep from having compression and so forth. This new policy that we've added to our compensation policy, and we're recommending that this any new certifications would be $500 or 24 cents an hour. Licensures would be for $1,000, which would be for 48 cents an hour. Associate's degrees would be $500, which would be 24 cents an hour. Bachelor's degrees would be $1,000, which is 48 cents an hour. Master's, EDS's, or JD's would be $1,500, which would be 72 cents an hour. And then the doctorate would be $2,000, which was 96 cents an hour. We did put a caveat that no employee would get more than $2,000 a year. They could not earn more than $2,000 a year under this policy. And it's also contingent on budget, so that every year the department heads and the constitutional officers need to take a look at and talk to their employees and find out where, you know, do some planning. We took a rough estimate for this year, if this is passed, and we put it into action. I went on the high side because I would rather have a more positive, if this encourages people to get higher education, or nobody that we found would be able to receive either associate's or bachelor's or master's this year, in this fiscal year. But for them to get certified or licensures, We did do an estimate of about $16,000 it would cost to do it this year, in this fiscal year.
Now, if I'm just going to pick a job, maintenance person gets a degree in, business administration. So let's say they get a bachelor's, they've been going to PVCC, and then they went nights somewhere else and got the degree. So they get $1,000.
Yes, sir.
But it has nothing to do with the job they're doing. Are you following me?
Yes. Well, what we were looking at is it does. A lot of the skills that people take away from getting a degree do them to help in just about any position that you can have.
Okay, so if I'm cutting the lawn and I didn't get a degree in business administration,
you're probably not going to still cut the lawn after that. That's basically the answer.
I'm guessing. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you're going to get a bachelor's.
Then you don't need it.
It's a good hypothetical, but
it's a hypothetical.
You can throw it out into anything else.
Well, we had a maintenance staff member who had a bachelor's degree when he was hired.
But you took that in consideration.
We took it in consideration.
If
he got a higher pay.
Bachelor's degree after they're hired.
If it was taken into consideration when they get hired, they're not going to get it now. Right?
Correct.
Correct. No, they will not.
Not retroactive.
It doesn't.
When you're hired, you consider three things: experience, education, and special skills. And essentially, I put that into the county administrator has the ability to work within 15% of the baseline.
Right.
So in my head, I was breaking up to 5% for experience, 5% for education, 5% for special skills. And so if someone has some of those things when they come to us, we would consider that in their hiring salary. If, however, someone's been hired and 2 years later they earn a master's degree and they had a bachelor's when they started and it's reasonably related to our work and it supports our work, then there should be some recognition of that.
Now, why talk
in the school system or other companies or these
offices? A few weeks ago, we talked about
certificate.
The surveyors.
Right. What about?
A few weeks ago, we talked about the surveyors and we.
Well, I was going to say the
we raised the
pay.
Now, that's just when they're doing survey work.
Once you got certified,
the
certification.
Right, certification. Right. So, for instance, we have one employee who's achieved three of those special certifications this year, and that employee would be subject to this 24 cents an hour raise because of the certification that's required by the state now that wasn't required before.
So it should be required to have the job. It should be if it's required by the state to do
it. No, you can't just...
It just became a requirement.
It's a requirement after you come on the job, not as before. If they come with the skill, we'll take it. But oftentimes you hire people saying you have to achieve that certification within 1 year of employment. Because that saves you money on the front end. And then they work on the job, and then they get a certification.
Teachers.
And then you should be paying them for the extra skill.
They call it probation.
You know, I have problems with this also. First of all, we're doing this, as I understand it, in this year, right?
This is what the proposal is.
Yes, that's what your proposal is.
It should have been during
$16,000. And you say that's on the high side, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to me, this should be brought up and integrated into the budget time in January, February, and March. And then, as I go back here and look at this part-time, I'm really disturbed about that. The employee must be a permanent full-time or permanent part-time employee.
Not a temporary wage employee.
Yeah, but a part-time person, employee, and we're saying here that they're a permanent part-time employee. If they have a bachelor's, they're going to get $500 for being.
No. Oh yes, $500. Yes, they would. But then they're bringing more skills.
Part-time is a part-time. You know, that's not their primary
job
in life. And I don't know why.
No, they do. They do
getting hung up on part-time here on.
It's
a
32-hour,
not 40. We have permanent part-time employees. They do receive some benefits. We We have one employee that is a .75. I call it a quasi. They call it a part-time. They work 30 hours a week. They have VRS benefits. They have health insurance benefits. They have, but they pay higher amount because we only pay 0.75 of what we normally would pay towards that.
Okay.
We have some employees that are 20-hour permanent part-time positions. They do not receive health benefits or VRS, but they do receive leave time.
No, they get leave time to be part-time.
That's vacation. But this part-time employment was created.
Now, we do have temporary wage employees, too.
Part-time employment was created so that you didn't have to pay benefits.
Sure.
And I can almost tell you the date that happened. And that's federal law. And that was the reason it was created, was so you didn't have to pay benefits.
Because of the Affordable Care Act?
No, but I'm going back to 1960.
No, Fair Labor Standard Act.
I'm talking 1960.
Fair Labor Standard Act does not address full-time or part-time.
It was created to be union, so you didn't have to be a union employer if you were part-time. So you didn't have to pay benefits, and which is health care, VRS, and
everything else. Federal law does not dictate whether we pay any kind of benefits. Now, state law does dictate, because we are a government entity,
that we do. But it doesn't.
But they do not.
It doesn't talk about health insurance, and it doesn't talk about vacation.
Yes, our statute does.
The county statute or the state?
The state.
Except
Fair County.
Give them vacation time?
I would have to pull it and show you. No, it states what we give on benefits and so forth. And we do have to pay some employees.
Where's this going? You know,
if you're changing the
law. How many employees do we have that are permanent part-time?
I'm thinking three.
Yeah.
We have two that are 20-hour. No. We have two that are 20 hour, and we have one that is a 30 hour. Every other the registrar has the 30 hour.
But they get
benefits. Yes, they get full benefits. 20 hours, I believe.
Sheriff, do you have two or one? Two?
Yeah.
So we have three 20-hour, two at the sheriff's office and one in Mr. Nichols' office.
And in 20 hours, do they get benefits?
They only get leave time.
What do you get, a week's vacation?
And holiday. They get holidays and leave.
How do you get paid holidays when you're part-time?
Well, that's that day, and it's a holiday, just like me. If it's next month is a holiday, it's a regular workday normal, I get paid for that holiday. The part-time employee was supposed to work that day, the scheduled workday, but it's a federal holiday. That's the same way in every federal government organization in New York.
Time?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
Without question.
If you're a regular part-time.
James, they've been like this long.
A 20-hour employee gets overtime.
Pardon?
It gets holiday pay.
Yes, sir. At what their normal rate.
Their normal rate. They don't get.
They don't get 8 hours. They would get 4 hours.
I don't get time and a half either. If I were.
Well, you weren't supposed to.
I'm a wage employee. I don't get time and a half for holiday. Unless I work on the holiday. But you
if you were if you were non-exempt
work week or your regular 20 hours,
you were salaried employee. You don't get paid time and a half.
He wasn't correct. I'm talking about me as if I was a wage employee.
So if he were a full-time non-exempt employee, they would get paid their full holiday.
So this has been going on anyway.
It's been going on.
So why are we bringing it up now?
I don't know. You were asking the questions. Yes, sir.
My only thing on this, and I'll make this really fast.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to give away the county, but I think it's a huge step
when our county knows how much we support our individuals and it's treated like a family, rather than looking at them and saying, hey, thanks for doing that, but guess what? I'm not going to use your line.
You're in a damn job.
I think it makes a huge difference when they know it's a family atmosphere. I think you're going to get a better employee. I think you're going to get better effort.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're going to have some consistency.
And I'm just so tired of it. I know budgets have had to be cut. There's been no choice. But
a lot of
people need to know we care.
Yes.
We haven't cut salaries.
Two questions. If someone earns 3 certificates in a year, are they going to have a $1,500 salary increase?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And the max that they can have in a year is $2,000. We did put a max.
And if you'll see in the policy, if their certifications go away, if they don't maintain certifications, their pay goes back down.
Or if there's a budgetary issue.
If they keep track of it.
Now, this doesn't do department and HR.
This has nothing to do with the sheriff's department. It's educational policy.
This support the sheriff's department's policy now in writing.
Yeah, but theirs is scaled a little bit different.
No, it's not. Exactly that.
Is that it, sir? It is?
Yeah, that's the numbers we took.
I told you 2 years ago that I was coming forward with also the best way, because I believe in that. This is just to spread it to all of our staff.
Right. And we talked about that when the sheriffs did that. We said, why not look at it for all?
We're basically doing it for everyone.
Everyone instead of just the sheriff's office.
Second thing would be that I can see the point being made of, say you're a part-time mower and you get your doctorate. You now get.
That's
a good point. That's really equivalent to $4,000.
You're going to step that with me.
Right. Well, you know, you're a specialist in cutting grass.
Well, it could happen.
They get a doctor, they get a $2,000.
There's a lot of Virginia Tech graduates.
It seems to me we should at least base the increase on a per hour basis as opposed to a flat basis like that, so that. If you are,
I broke it down.
What is when you go to hear Mr. O'Brien?
It's 25 cents an hour.
Yeah,
I understand the breakdown is that, but it's not clear to me whether we're paying that, you know, per hour or whether
it goes to the base salary, and that would take it out.
Yeah, a part-time employee would receive a $500 raise if they got a certificate, but in reality, if they were working half-time, they'd receive a $250 raise.
Right. So this shows the hourly breakdown, and we can put that in the policy.
We can put that in the policy.
Right. That would be a good clarification. But in the policy itself, it says it's prorated based on what type of employee they are. If they're a 30-hour employee, they only get 75%. If they're a half-time employee, they only get 50%. If they're less than half-time, they're not going to get it because they're only permanent part-time less than half-time.
It goes into their base salary, which is their credible comp, which the IRS uses and everything. And then our system will automatically, based off of what the number of hours that they're assigned, will calculate whether it's, you know, what I gave you was based off of what most of our employees work is 40 hours a week.
Okay.
But not all of them.
And then how do pay, so let's say, you know, somebody gets 4 certificates per year on average, and I'm not saying that there are that many certificates available for their position or whatever the case may be. So they start off at, say, a pay band 12, and by the time they've gone through this, they're now at like a pay band 18, but still a pay band 12.
Because there's some real new pay bands.
They don't move pay bands.
But now they're essentially being paid at that level, so are we...
No, it would take somebody that's sitting at the very top of the band. Again, we are looking at all of the we're looking at all the policies right now, and that is one of the issues, because nowhere in our policy does it say that they can't go above the band width, which makes absolutely no sense to me. But that would be, if they are at the max of their band, we would not put them any higher than the band width. That is being looked at in when it does discuss in our policy for our pay bands. And we can put in this policy that no employee would receive an increase that would be higher than their position's bandwidth.
So if they have not been paid then, your degree, your master's degree or whatever, your bachelor's degree, you're not going to get $2,000 now?
If you're sitting, there's only one employee right now. This has been the biggest problem I've had, is all employees kept sitting at the bottom of the bands because they kept moving the bands as they moved employees. I'm trying to make it so that we have them spread across so that they can move up that band rather than move that range in the band.
What determines when an employee moves from, I mean, the job classification determines the band, right?
Correct.
The Board of Supervisors has to approve a pay band range for a position.
That's what you just approved. Those bands.
You want to do those infrequently.
If you have to look at that policy, we're not voting on what you're looking
for. So should we have a policy that limits the maximum amount that you can be paid above your pay band then?
You're right.
Well, to me, it makes no sense to go above the pay band because that's what you're saying is the max we're willing to pay for this position.
You won't have the problem.
You won't have that problem.
Madam Chairman, can I make a suggestion?
Yes.
Assuming the board is on board with having a policy like this with the clarifications, it would seem to me the appropriate thing, as Mr. O'Brien pointed out, might be appropriate simply to make that clear to the staff and ask the staff to clarify the issues that have come up that the board wants
and
to
come back with them.
Yes, except that you're adding more work on the staff than I've already answered your questions.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll do it however you want. But
in all fairness, what Rob says should be done. So there won't be any misunderstanding.
Then the name can be above their pay band?
Yes. I mean, whatever these differences in...
That's one thing.
And not only that, there's other things in here to me that doesn't make this a go anyway, is the $16,000 to pull out of personnel contingency. If we want to pull $16,000 to build it into the next...
The budget.
To the next
budget. That's a whole separate issue.
This should have been a budget issue.
That's your all's decision.
That's a threshold question. If you don't think this is an appropriate time to address this, then I would defer it until a bunch of time.
Or we can say it doesn't go into effect until July 2017.
If we make it.
It's better to address it at budget season than to say something goes
fine, but let's say to take Mrs. Parrish's recommendation there of, making this effective in 2017 budget. I think that to re-argue this question, if we basically agree in as a board now that, as Mr. Sheridan put it very nicely, that we need to encourage people to grow themselves and to expand their education, and that's to the benefit of Fluvanna and its citizens. If we agree with that in principle and we agree with what's being presented, I understand your point, and I would certainly say, please don't present things that are likely to be budget-related items early in the season like this.
But should
we postpone this to redo this whole argument again? And
are we going to move to $16,000?
Well, we're not going to take it out because it's not going to be effective until 2017.
If we don't have this policy, then at budget time, the directors and constitutional officers can't budget for it, put it in their budget if we haven't already pre-approved this policy.
But it can be pulled by the board in 2017's budget.
And it's not like I didn't brief the board on it specifically and asked you about this policy and brought it forward because you said to bring it forward.
Right.
But it's not in the budget.
But we asked me to
explain that at the time.
Right.
And you have it in your budget because you have a personal contingency budget.
We've got to stop pushing things. I mean, this is exactly what we...
Money doesn't grow on trees.
Oh, come on, $16,000. It's in the budget. He's taken it out of the
Well, it wasn't designated in the budget.
That's what that's for.
So it's in the personnel contingency.
It's already in there.
By designation, the board many years ago created a personnel contingency pot, mm-hmm. as well as a board contingency pot. The personnel contingency pot is for those things like an increase in health insurance when someone's hired that has a family plan where the previous person had a single plan. It's for when you hire someone like when Mr. Coffey was hired 6 or 7 years ago, was substantially higher than what the play plan was for because of the special skills and experience. That's what the personnel thing is for. It covers unexpected or unknown or unusual things.
Our new created or
changed policies. Yes, sir. I understand your point. It's just that I brought this forward because I thought it
to. But that's the reason, so we can air these things.
Okay,
but I would really like if someone on this board can make this motion and we can get past this.
It's not an issue.
I'm going to make a motion to defer this to 2017.
Second.
It has been moved by Mr. Allenbrook and second by Mr. Reed. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Aye.
I oppose.
I guess you can do what you want if you can get a motion.
Can we have a motion? Do we have anybody?
I move to approve policy 1.5, additional compensation for degrees, licensures, and certifications effective July 1, 2015, applying $16,000 from FY16. Personal contingency for FY16 program support.
I'd like to have that amended to include the clarification about the hourly rate.
Yes, sir. The policy document itself will list that, and it will show a full-time column and a part-time column and the hourly rates in that chart.
Did you want to address the issue?
I think the issue about should we wait? Where is a cap being set is an important question.
And with the cap?
That was the second one. The other one is you want to have some requirement of some relevancy to the...
Absolutely. That's assumed, I think, but...
Okay.
Well, then it'll be not to exceed the cap of the pay band in which
max.
They're in.
Right.
Okay. Are we okay to do this?
I don't know that I would leave it just at that because I think you could...
Mr. Sheridan has a question for me. Are we okay to do this or do we need to wait?
You're going to add the things to...
Well, what I would suggest doing is if there are concerns that the board wants put into it specifically that are not here, that you approve it contingent on their being done and subject to the board's ratification at a later date. So, you know, maybe next meeting they could add these things in, bring it in
it'll be on the consent agenda.
Right, okay. All right.
What I was talking about, though, is the relevancy of whatever it is. So, that, you know, if you have a plumber that gets a degree in art history, is that what you had in mind? I think what you had in mind is the plumber gets a certification.
Job related.
Yeah, I think...
I'm not sure that's a college or any function. With all due respect to my colleague,
I'm raising this issue.
It's in the policy.
It's in the policy. If you have a degree,
specifically, it talks about whether it's approved by the county administrator and in job role. Where is it?
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
No.
The certification and licensure has to be job.
Should be beneficial.
But not necessarily.
Not the employee skills and competencies related to the college.
I think that's clear enough.
So the question is, what happens for your master's and your bachelor's and your...
Does it have to...
We currently, regardless of what the degree is, if they have received a degree, they have shown a positive work ethic, they have shown that they have the capabilities. A lot of the undergrad, all of the degrees do require some basic skills that would increase and would be utilized in any position that we have. Even mowing the lawns, because they don't just mow lawns, they have to be able to do some basic math, basic reading, basic writing, and this enhances them. And this is why when we were looking at the different, originally we had said the degrees had to be in relationship, but then when we looked at it and what we've looked at in the past, we have not taken and mandated that those degrees be in that field. It is usually preferred, and that's what we look at, how the job description is.
Let me give you a specific example. Ms. Parrish and myself apply for a job in your company, and it's a frontline job doing grounds maintenance, and we both come with 5 years of experience, and she has an associate's degree and I do not, and we're both co-equal candidates in any respect. If you hired her, would you pay her the exact same thing you were going to pay me, or would you pay her a little bit more because she comes with 5 years experience and education? If the answer is you would pay her a little bit more, then you've already answered your question. You value the education. My point is that education is considered when we hire someone, and if we hire them with more education than the job required, but it supports the job and gives us better skills, if you're going to pay for it then, why wouldn't you pay it when they attain it later? That's the rationale for looking at education. What would you do when they're hired?
Madam Chairman,
yes,
Mr. Nichols pointed out this paragraph 3D, which does make it discretionary. But I think you still are going to consider the fact that, you know, somebody goes and gets a law degree to go to be a plumbing technician. Does that really increase his value to the county?
So really, 3D should say the certificate, well, degree and or licensure should be beneficial to the county, and is at the discretion of the...
Okay. Then now you're going to have to get in a whole different level.
Yes.
Who makes that decision? Because mm-hmm. the constitutional officers will be arguing for their person, the county administrator will be arguing for this, for that. That's why the education part, the associate's, bachelor's, master's, doctorate, you're not going to have too many people in the frontline positions that are going to go get a doctorate.
Right. I think we're making it harder than...
It's going to be hard to enforce. We want to make it reasonable.
We have a motion, and we have a second, and you wanted to add. Would you be specific on what you wanted to add to the motion?
As Mr. Payne said, that there's some addressing of the cap, and that it's ratified by the board, as well as the hourly rate.
Okay.
Those are the
two
main things. I think we're probably splitting hairs on the degree component.
Yeah. Are you satisfied with that, Mr. Sheridan?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mr. Sheridan, second, with some added language to the motion.
Yeah, my last comment is that you're spending $16,000 that you hadn't planned on spending in this year. When, if you want to spend it, you spend it in the following year, and you anticipate that. And the fact that you have personnel contingency, like Mr. Nichols says, it can cover a multitude of different contingencies. But this is another $16,000 that's coming out now, and it should come out in the next year, and considered what revenue and all we have, all of it should be taken. Everybody wants this and everybody wants that. And you know, there's no end to it. There's no end to spending this, and you should do it in an orderly manner, and I don't support it.
Okay. All right. So we have a motion by Mr. Sheridan, seconded by Mr. O'Brien.
And this does contemplate being ratified by the board next meeting.
Yes. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Thank you.
Let's go eat.
Let's go eat.
Thank you.
So we need a recess, please.
All right.
Move the recess.
All right. We have a motion by Mr. Reed and a second by Ms. Sheridan. We recess. All in favor?
How long is this?
About we're going to reconvene in an hour.
Sir,
just one.
6:30?
It would be
6:30.
6:43 now. 6:43
would be.
Well, 6:43 now.
So. Does this take an hour? I think so.
Let's say
the presentations
an hour.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's say
6:43 or 6:45.
Where they're going to be now?
What you're not going to get.
That's right.
Okay.
That's what I always said.
Let's have a motion to reconvene.
Reconvene the meeting. Since I can't see what I'm
doing,
if I can find my glasses.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Good times. At this point in my life,
Madam Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned
and the Fluvana County Board of Supervisors convening in an open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-8 of the Code of Virginia 1950, as amended, that only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting. A second and a recorded vote needed.
Second. We've had a motion by Mr. Weaver, second by Mr. Uhlenberg. Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Chair, aye. Okay, now we
will... Motion to dismiss?
No, we need to extend the meeting now.
I move to extend the meeting to 11 o'clock.
Second.
All right, it has been motioned that we extend the meeting to 11 o'clock by Mr. Weaver and a second by Mr. Uhlenberg. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Now we need a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second?
Second.
Motion to adjourn by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Uhlenberg. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair says aye.
Isn't that the goofiest thing to extend the meeting to?